Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
The radio home of the Buffalo Sabres. This is the Buffalo Sabres postgame show, live from KeyBank Center. Here's your host, Brian Koziol.
Potential 2-on-0 here. Back the other way come the Jets. Drop pass. Saved by Luukkonen. Rebound. Open net. They score. Lowry got the puck just when it looked like Luukkonen had saved the day. And the Jets get the extra point in a 3-2 overtime win.
Winnipeg getting it done there in overtime. Adam Lowry's seventh of the season at 3:59. Our goal of the game, the game winner for the Jets, brought to you by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Early detection of cancer is our goal. Get in the game at roswellpark.org/WGR. We welcome you back here to the press box at KeyBank Center. I'm Brian Koziol. Pat Malacara with me here. Paul Hamilton's on his way to the Sabre dressing room. We'll get player reaction coming up. The Sabres get a point, but have now lost five in a row, their longest losing streak of the season. Losses to Minnesota, Vancouver, the Islanders, the Avalanche, and tonight to the Jets. Overtime loss, 3-2. Buffalo did have an opportunity in the third. Some good opportunities that Ryan McLeod missed on a follow-up when he had a yawning net. The Sabres did have a power play late in the game. The power play there didn't come through, although it did early in the period, or early in the game of the first period. The Buffalo got their first goal there, but unable to come through there. And then in the overtime, Lowry, his seventh of the year, wins it for the Jets. And the Sabres will try to snap out of this losing skid again on Saturday as the five-game homestand continues against Utah. The Sabres 0-1-1 on this five-game homestand. We'll be again heading down to the locker room in a moment. We'll hear from Lindy Ruff. We'll get Paul Hamilton's take. We'll update you on the scores. Pat, I guess you'd say a better result than the Colorado game the other night in the sense that they got a point, but still nevertheless disappointing that they only able to get two past Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah, I mean, Hellebuyck is one of the best goalies in the league. This is a Winnipeg team that had the hottest start to a season virtually ever, but they come into tonight losing 7 out of 10. And the urgency in the third period maybe is where you want to look to tonight. I don't know that, especially in the power play, nothing really happened. There was the best overall chance of the 5-on-4. Was there enough urgency to get the puck to the net and drive the net? And the period just kind of happened. Yep. Not much really happened in that period. So maybe that's where you look and say, you win a period, tied 2-2 heading to the third, you win the game. And you didn't, at least for me, I don't get the feeling that they overwhelmingly, you know, really on Winnipeg.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of opportunities. I mean, the best one we mentioned, McLeod,
right,
had that yawning net and just kind of hit it sideways, like through the pads, through the crease, and didn't end up going in for him. Of course, Sabres did have a goal from Tyson Kozak, a disappointing thing that doesn't score. Speaking of Kozak, he's up first here with Paul.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Brian. Tyson, have to be disappointed. Looked like you had your first NHL goal there, and it gets disallowed. What were your thoughts as the play was developing then afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, obviously sucks for having to be disallowed, but I kind of just saw open net, and I had the puck in the slot and just had to put it in, but sucks for it to be disallowed, and obviously sucks even more for us to lose in overtime. So,
when did you find out that you were going to play?
Earlier this morning, actually. I guess my parents got in last night. I didn't know about it. Saw them this morning in the hotel lobby, so it was kind of a surprise to me. I was wondering what they were doing here, but it was a pretty cool moment for sure.
How nervous were you?
Very, honestly. Legs were shaking, hands were shaking, but after that first shift, I felt very comfortable after that.
Do you think you guys as a line really played and filled your role?
I thought we played good. I thought we were good on the forecheck. I thought we had more ozone time than D-zone time for sure. So made it a little easier for me, being my first game. Those two guys are really fun to play with.
A milestone like this experience, does it make you kind of reflect on the journey that it's taken for you to get here?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, growing up in a small town, not a lot of hockey players play in the NHL from a small town. So it's a very cool moment for me, my family, and kind of everybody back home.
When you hear the score, just what did, reaction of the guys, just what did you feel and experience in those moments?
Say pure joy and excitement. I mean, obviously playing in my first game was, it's really cool, and it's, I'm super grateful. And to what I thought have scored in my first game is an unreal moment, but got disallowed, so it happens.
What did you notice as the biggest differences between the NHL and the AHL?
The biggest one I noticed right away was time and space, for sure. You don't got a lot of time when you got the puck, so you got to think fast and make that play fast.
Thanks, Tyson. Tyson Kozak on the post game. Brian, back to you.
Yeah, an unfortunate moment for sure. I mean, every guy dreams of his first moment when he makes it to the big club, the big leagues, the NHL, Pat. It's unfortunate that that got taken away from him.
Yeah, goaltender interference, unfortunate. And, just talked a little bit about time and space and something you hear a lot about, being able to adjust, and things happen quicker once you go up a level from the minors to the pros. And Kozak doing a nice job tonight of adjusting to that and putting himself in the right spot. Had it not been for that goaltender interference on Malenstein, that resulted in the goal coming off the board.
Two goaltender challenges in this game, and one stayed, and the Sabres had that challenge early when Fleury scored. That stayed, and then, of course, Winnipeg challenged the Kozak goal, which came off the board.
Right, because Vilardi touched the glove of Lukanen outside of the crease, even though Lukanen's body was inside, the glove was outside.
Yep.
And then Malenstein. Now, there wasn't enough contact. If you're
go more in a moment. Back to the room. Here's Ukko Pekka Luukkonen with Paul.
Ukko, me with exception maybe the last play, it seemed like defensively in front of you it was a much, much better game. It seemed like you would handle the first shot. There weren't a lot of second opportunities. It seemed like the guys were clearing rebounds and getting the guys out of there.
No, 100%. I think we played a good game tonight. That's why it kind of stinks so much. Defensively, we were really solid tonight. We didn't give them much. I feel like we created enough chances to win the game. And, I feel like we didn't get what we wanted, but it was a good turnover from the last game.
The penalties finally caught up. You guys gave them five power plays, and then they finally took advantage on a 5-on-3. Something that I know you guys have been thinking about, trying to stay out of the penalty box.
Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious that can't happen. I appreciate how great the guys are killing. I think we beat up. Guys are putting our body on the line and doing, as much as they can. So, it's going to get caught, or it will caught up on you at some point when you take enough penalties. So I feel like that's what kind of happened there.
It's not the result you wanted, Ukko, but was it an encouraging response after the way that the Avs game went?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it's not what we wanted, but, I feel like it was a good turnaround. We defended well, boxing out, taking care of the rebound, so way better than the last game.
On the challenge, what did you feel? You did get your glove hit. They said it was outside of the crease. How did you see it?
I don't know if there's a smart way to say this, but that's just, I feel like that's bullshit. There's no way I can make a save on that. I'm not that far out from the crease. If they want to go, call that a good goal, I don't see a difference on the other end then. Our guy gets pushed into him. I don't know. It's a quick game. It's hard for the refs to make the right calls always, but I have no chance to make a save on that play. I don't know if he has any other route to take there. I might be a little bit outside the crease, but, I feel like that was kind of two similar plays and, two different calls. And in the end, they make the calls. We kind of play, and that's how it went today.
Is that the biggest problem, though? It's to the point now where really no one knows what the call is going to be. You barely know what the rule is.
No, 100%. I don't honestly know what to say about it, but it's, I just try to play goalie as much as I can, and I think I had a chance today on the first goal. So, I don't know if your toes are out of the crease now, it's kind of free for all, and you can get hit, and they can do whatever they want, or what's the thing there. So, as I said, it's not the ref's fault. They have to make the call quickly there, and you know, in the heat of the game. So, but it's just hard when it's kind of going. You know, I don't know exactly what happened when our goal got caught or taken off, but you know, I don't think that should have happened today.
Thanks, Ugo. Ugo Pekka Luukkonen in another post game. Brian, back to you.
Okay, Luukkonen obviously frustrated there as he was bumped into his glove. Says, quote, "I feel like that was," and that we bleep that out for you. And then so he's like, "Look, I'm not that far out from the crease. I have no chance to make a save on that play." Says he's not blaming the refs, more so just Pat. What is interference? What is not? It's such a gray area. It's amazing, as I was saying with Paul during the intermission, how this goaltender interference challenge has now, like, it's almost become a nightly thing in games. And beyond the fact that I hate it as a sports fan because it takes away moments. Look at the NHL. I've been hosting this now 17 years. Mm-hmm. Every year I feel like, why is the league trying to ruin the best moment in their game, which is a goal? They try to find ways to ruin moments, whether it's the offsides stick of the blade millimeter challenge there, or this goal. Like,
I'm conflicted.
He doesn't know what the rule is. He's right. A goalie in the NHL, and he doesn't know what the rule is.
So I
want it to be clear and concise, and stop wasting so much time having all of us guess.
Offside should be much easier. It should be cut and dry, but they've had to update the rule so much. And yes, it used to be the skate had to be on the blue line. Now it's at least parallel to the blue line and not in the zone. Goaltender interference, there's a lot more gray area. Luukkonen made the point that I was starting to make a little bit, was there enough contact on Beck Malenstein that forced him into Connor Hellebuck?
Like,
to me, there was.
To me, on Malenstein, I think it's clear that there was a contact with Hellebuck's pad in the blue.
Which is not a goal, then.
Which then is not a goal. However, he's going toward the net as you would want him to do on an offensive chance. And the Jet player, to me, steers him right into the pad.
Yes.
So that's where I was conflicted about the play and sitting there saying, well, Malenstein didn't really do it. Yes, his leg and his skate
him, yes.
Did it, but it was the Jet player that made it happen.
Which is part of the rule. Is if a player there's contact with the player forced into a goaltender, then that negates them interfering with the goalie, essentially. And to me, there was enough there that Malenstein had no other path. He was forced into Connor Hellebuck, clipping him on the way by. The league saw it differently.
Yeah.
When they put out their explanation, there was no mention of contact forcing Malenstein into Hellebuck. It was simply he made contact, not allowing the goaltender within his crease to make the save, which is the first part of the rule without any of the exceptions.
3-2, Winnipeg wins it in overtime. The Sabres have lost 5 in a row. They'll try to get back in the win column Saturday against Utah. Here is Lindy Ruff now live.
What they had been through.
I thought the response was good. Got to start a couple tough penalties. Said, you know, I can take a look at every call. I can take a look at some of the box outs, like the box out by 78, where his guy went down. I can show you 10 of those in a game. And I've been harping on our team to be firm around the net and box your guy out. And it's like one of the first ones I've seen called. You know, the Thompson penalty, that's a penalty we can't, you know, you can't make that 5-on-3. You can't take that penalty. But there was a lot of good in the game.
As a coach, when it comes to these challenges for goalie interference, how challenging is it because of the lack of consistency and it's really all become about whether a guy goes into the crease on his own or not?
You don't know unless you challenge. It's that kind of gray. You don't know. I thought just the fact that he wasn't allowed to make a save, it's an interference penalty. It's at least an interference penalty then. Like, he knocked his hand down, that's where the puck was going. You got to challenge that. He was out of he was out of the crease. The guy that went through was out of the crease. Does that mean the guy can run the goalie over because he's out of the crease? No. So it's always a hit and miss. But the only way you'll know is challenge it. And you get the kid goes your way, it doesn't go. I don't like the call. Didn't like it either way. We got to go the other way on us, and it went the right way for them.
How do you feel like your defense group really stepped up or played tonight without Dahlin?
I thought we played a solid game. I thought the group played a little bit. I thought second period we lost too many battles below the goal line. We got a lot better at that and a lot quicker in the third. Played a really solid third period. We just left. I mean, if you look at the McLeod, the rebound that went back door for an empty net that kind of bounced over his stick. The three plays in overtime where you're walking in alone. I think we showed our NHL youth. Like for Kulik, who's got a bullet for a shot to try a play that he tried. I give him another 1,000 chances and he's going to shoot it every time. The guy was basically saying, go ahead, walk in. And I think that's just the unselfish part about a player that doesn't have enough NHL games. He's thinking, I got to pass this. We definitely had our chances to convert. You look at the 3-on-1 that would have, you know, opened the game up in the, I think it was the second or with Krebs. And when you don't convert those, we're putting a lot of stress on our defensive game because it's your one mistake away from letting a team back in or a team getting a lead. We didn't give up a lot of those ugly opportunities like we did the other night, which I thought the response was good.
What did you think of Tyson? What made him effective, he and his line mates?
They were just a good line. I thought Aubé played a heck of a game. Aubé was moving. Aubé was strong in the puck. He looks like he did when in training camp. I think he's finally got his game back in the right place. And you got two strong guys. You got a guy that's fearless in Kozak. And, you know, I feel bad. He's got a possible game-winning goal sitting in his pocket and it gets taken away. And I'd already congratulated him. So that part's unfortunate.
Did you like the way your defense took away the second opportunities? They didn't have too many rebound opportunities or second opportunities, it seemed like.
We're better. We spent a lot of time talking about that. I didn't like the first goal. We weren't strong enough in the first goal. That guy should have never got to the front of the net. And that's the area of the game we're working on as a group. We can't give up opportunities where they undercut us, get to the net front, and we can't give up second opportunities, which can go uncontested like the other night.
How can a night in the press box for Jack Quinn help him moving forward?
You just look at the bulk of his season. One empty net goal. We just need him to find more. It's just based on really on production.
What did you see on the overtime goal?
Well, like I said, we had 3 2-on-1s. We don't convert. Probably don't want your defenseman to gamble there as the third guy. So they're going 2-on-2-on-0 the other way, and overtime is you're going to trade a chance. You're going to get two or three going one way, you're going to give up one the other way. And I haven't looked at it, but I think we could have done a better job stopping in front of our net coming back. Thanks.
All right. That is Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff. His press conference brought to you by Steve Foley Law. If you've been injured, it's time to get serious. Time to call Steve Foley Law. 3-2 Winnipeg the score as we bring it back up here to the press box. Overtime winner for Adam Lowry, 3:59 in. The Sabres have now lost 5 games in a row. All right, we were going to say goodnight to all of our local affiliates at this time. If you want to keep listening to the postgame, you can go to WGR550.com or you can listen on the Odyssey app. For all of you coming back here on our flagship on WGR, more postgame coming up. We'll get Paul Hamilton's take. We'll get Pat's scoreboard. We'll update you on the standings, more stats and highlights from this one. Sabres have lost 5 in a row. Overtime loss to the Jets, 3-2 the final. I'm Brian Colzie along with Pat Malacaro and Paul Hamilton. This is the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Perfetti in the corner, plays it around the wall, near point, Piak plays it along the blue line. Yoki Haru, Perfetti takes it away, and a quick chance of the far post stopped by Luukkonen.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen faced 31 shots. Three got by him, including the game winner from Adam Lowry. But that one right there is our save of the game, brought to you by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your local Upstate Honda dealer today. Welcome back to KeyBank Center here on the postgame. 3-2 Winnipeg, victorious in overtime. Brian Colzio with you. The Sabres have now lost five in a row. They'll try to get back in the win column Saturday against Utah. 1 o'clock puck drop. The Steve Foley Law pregame gets going at noon. Let's get to Paul Hamilton now, down in the media room. Paul, what's your overall thought here on coming off of what you said was maybe the worst loss in team history, that absolute four-goal collapse against Colorado? They get a point tonight against the Jets.
Well, it absolutely was the worst loss in team history. They had never done that before, you know, giving up a four-goal lead at home. They'd only done it one other time in 1988 in Calgary. But, yeah, I thought it was a good response overall. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, you got to bottom line it. I mean, there are no moral victories. I liked some of the defensive plays. I liked that Luukkonen didn't have to face a lot of rebounds. They made some mistakes, and it did cost them. But overall, I liked how they rebounded. I liked their overall game. If they'd come in 7-2 and got out of here with that game, I'd be totally talking about a totally different thing.
Yeah.
But they didn't come in 7-2, you know, and you know, now you have five losses in a row, and it just keeps rolling. And, you know, Lindy Ruff went through it, but, you know, the mistake you make on the first goal, forget about the challenges, we can talk about that later, but just the mistake you make letting Vilardi come across and you know, even give him a chance to hit your goaltender's glove or to make a deflection like that. You know, Byram has to be stronger on that play. And, you know, there's not too many defensive plays to talk about that they weren't strong. You know, the overtime where Lindy talked about, you know, they had 3 2-on-1s and Kulik, you know, he just hit it right on the head that they basically dared him. Go ahead. You want to take the puck right down the slot? Go ahead. And he does have a rocket for a shot. And I noticed a lot with him tonight. He's thinking too much. He gets caught in between plays because he wants to be a teammate. You know, well, you know what? I'm not going to shoot here. I'm gonna see if I could be a good teammate and pass the puck and maybe give him a better opportunity or something like that. And if he was in the American Hockey League, he'd probably have 7 or 8 goals by now. Just because he would be willing to take that shot. Then he gets caught in between on certain plays in regulation, and then he winds up like dribbling the puck and losing it, and the whole scoring opportunity gets taken away because he's not real sure yet, you know, that, well, should I shoot it? Should I? You know, and he is real sure when he's in the AHL. And you know, he just, you know, they had some golden opportunities in the overtime to be able to take a win in that. But then, you know, they make, you know, two mistakes that Lindy Ruff talked about in the overtime. You got Byram who, you know, comes up on the 2-on-1. And basically, if you don't make a good play, you're all three now caught up ice. And that gave the Jets a 2-on-0 the other way. They didn't score on the 2-on-0. But then Alex Tuch didn't take Lowry. You know, he was there, but, he didn't take the net front there. And Lowry winds up, you know, putting the puck in the net for the overtime goal. So it's not like a lot of mistakes we're talking about. Too many penalties, again. You know, you give them a 5-on-3. I saw, you know, I know Lindy didn't like Bryson's penalty. It looked like a penalty to me. Thompson's definitely was a penalty. And they wind up with a 5-on-3, which they came within 28 seconds of killing. With, and usually they have Greenway out there to help on those 5-on-3s, and he's not available. So I thought they did an overall good job, and they did a great job killing penalties. But, you know, you give them a 5-on-3, and they score, and they're 1-for-5 on the power play, but they got 5 opportunities. And you just, this team can't be giving up 5 opportunities on the power play, whether you like the calls or you don't. They just can't be doing that. So that was another thing that didn't improve. So many things did improve, but that was the one thing that didn't improve. And I'm going to ask you, I know the final shots after 3 periods was 29-28. Did you, what were the shots in the third period?
The third ended up being 7-3 Sabres.
So it was a low chance third period, but I thought the Sabres had the better of the zone play. I thought they were buzzing around the net, around Hellebuck, and they missed a couple of good opportunities that maybe didn't turn into shots, but you know, they certainly, I think, had the opportunities to win this hockey game. And you got to feel awful for Kozak, whether you like the call or not, on the challenge. The poor kid works hard. It was a hard-working goal, the type of goal he's always going to score. That if you want to know what type of player he is, watch that goal. That's the type of player he is, and that's the way he plays all the time. And, you know, his parents are excited. You know, they're at the game, and it looks like he's got his first goal, and then it gets taken away. And what could have been the game-winning goal, you know, that would have put the Sabres up 3-2. So you could have maybe left with a win there, had that counted. So I feel bad for the poor kid, because he played well and earned a goal. It just unfortunately got taken away.
The two calls, obviously, neither of them went Buffalo's way. Both goaltender interferences, Paul. The Sabres challenged one on Fleury, who made contact with Lukanen's glove. Now, Lukanen was very direct, Paul. He said, obviously, some words we can't repeat on the radio, and then said, there's just no way I can make that save. Lindy Ruff added, said, hey, just because part of his body's outside the crease, does that mean he can get run over? So, obviously, the Sabres are not going to be happy about it because both went against them. But let's start with that Lukanen one there. What do you take about the interpretation after hearing Lukanen and Lindy's explanations?
And he's right, where he said, I didn't have the opportunity to make the save. I could have made that save, and he hit my glove, and he took away my opportunity to make the save. It's not really, let's say that happens out at center ice and you do that to a regular defenseman. You go by and you just hit his glove. Well, you're not going to get an interference penalty for hitting his glove. Now, Lukanen's saying, you know, I don't understand kind of what you're talking about, that, well, I don't understand. What is it, free season on goaltenders, that they can just, if I'm not all the way in the crease, they can do whatever they want to me? Was how he felt about it. So it's not what he's talking about, and isn't really how the rule was applied. The rule was applied correctly. I think what he's talking about is maybe the rule needs to be changed. You know, as far as, you know, what players can do with goaltenders, or if a goaltender is coming out to make a save, it doesn't matter if he's right on the top of his crease or something like that. You know, that's what it is. The rule was interpreted correctly. His glove was definitely outside of the crease. So, therefore, it's not goaltender interference.
Here's the rule, Paul, real quick. 69.1 says, quote, incidental contact with a goalie will be permitted and resulting goals allowed when contact is initiated outside of the goal crease, provided the attacking player has made a reasonable effort to avoid such contact.
He didn't make an effort to avoid it. He didn't make an effort to make it. I think he was just coming through. That was the lane he took, and I think he inadvertently just hit the goalie's glove coming through. So it's you know, I think the rule was applied correctly, but if you want more goals in the game, then tweak the rule. Yeah. You know, if you want goals, if you want more goals in the game, I'm sorry, don't tweak the rule, because then you want that to be okay. You want that, if you want to see more goals in the game and not goals taken away, if you're a goaltender, stay in the crease. If not, if you have part out, then if it gets hit, it gets hit. You know, because you want to see more goals.
Saber goal, Paul, that got taken away from Kozak, that was essentially Malenstein skating through the Jet players, kind of steering him towards the blue paint, which allowed the contact to happen there. Would we say Malenstein tried to avoid contact? Would we say he on purpose tried to make contact? Again, I'd probably say it's in between, kind of like the other one was too, but that happens just in the blue paint. The Lukanens happens just outside the blue paint. So maybe that's where the difference is, even though maybe
that's
in some
exactly
sense
the
these plays have some similarities to them.
That's exactly the difference. He didn't try to do it. He didn't do it on purpose. But that was the lane he took, and he clicked skates with him. I'm not sure the contact that may have happened afterwards. I'd have to look at it a couple times more. He definitely was with the defenseman, and as he came through, but he definitely, with his left skate, made contact with Hellebuck's skate. Now, was Hellebuck's skate also coming forward to try to make a save? I don't know. But there definitely was contact well inside the crease. Again, I feel the rule was applied correctly. If you want to change the rule to inadvertent contact, is okay. You know, if you want to put it on the referees in Toronto to try to decide if the player did it on purpose, then you make it a judgment call. This is basically, if you make contact in the crease, it's contact in the crease. So there are a number of different ways you can go with it. I think the rule was applied correctly both times, but I would understand if players would want to see the rules change somewhat to make it different. And the thing I want to see changed is make a decision in 45 seconds. And if you don't, then it's the call, what's called on the ice. These replays, no, neither one of those replays were excessively long, but they were still too long. Again, make a call. You can go through more than one replay in 45 seconds. If you don't see something that is, you know, what you can tell right away is illegal, go with what was called on the ice. And that's my huge problem with it, is it takes too long. It should never take more than 45 seconds, ever.
Paul, okay, next is Utah. The Sabres have lost 5 in a row, so obviously they'll be looking to get back going in the win column here. You're still, even though it's Western Conference opponents, you're still losing ground. Even though you're giving them points, we say, well, that doesn't matter. But they've got to start winning, Paul. 5 in a row is not going to land you anywhere near the postseason.
Yeah, you've picked up 2 of your last 10 points. That's not even remotely good enough. I mean, again, you have to bottom line it at this point, you know, especially when the Sabres, Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams, said at the beginning of the year, the time is now, and they're right. They were right to say it. And that's true. It has to be, the time has to be now. You know, the development of players and the rest of it, that's all done now. You know, they can still develop into better players, but, you know, they become the core of your team now, and they have to be able to come through. And, you know, through everything we're talking about here, there were still opportunities to win that hockey game, especially in overtime, where, you know, they got the puck and got down in, you know, the Winnipeg zone and had some gorgeous opportunities that they basically never got the opportunity because they flubbed the shot or tried to pass or you know, they didn't force Hellebuck into a big save, but they you know, the opportunities were coming forward where they had the chance where you don't even have to worry about Lowry putting the puck in the net. So it's unfortunate that you can't sit there and say, well, they played a good game. It was a totally even game. One team has to walk away with 2 points. You got your 1 point. As I said, if they came in 7-2, that's what we'd be saying, that they played a good game. Sometimes it just doesn't go your way, and you move on. But unfortunately, when it's your fifth loss in a row and you only have 2 points out of your last 10, that's not what you can say. It's basically you're in a little over a week, you are frittering away what was you were in a playoff spot and almost in second place in the division. And now you're to a point where we're going to start talking about leapfrogging teams, and you're getting further and further behind. And it's just and all this came together in just a little over a week.
Yep, the Sabres, Paul, now with the point tonight, have 25. Dead last is 23, Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So you are closer now to the bottom than you are from where you were a week and a half ago.
Yep. Yeah, and they came into the game 25th in the NHL. Not good enough.
No.
It's just simply, plain and simply, I don't care how they play, whether they play. If they lost all five games and were the better team in all five games, I don't care. You have to bottom line this. And after they should have been better than 25th in the NHL coming into tonight's game.
Paul, thank you so much. We will talk to you Saturday with Utah here in town.
Okay.
All right. Yes, the Utah Hockey Club. We'll have the Steve Foley Law pregame at 12. Puck drop at 1. If you're listening in your car and you're on your drive home, we appreciate you joining us here tonight. Your drive home from the game brought to you by Paddock Chevrolet, with you for the extra mile. Sabres were without Rasmus Dahlin tonight, out with back spasms. Who filled in? Well, Bo Byram and Owen Power played a ton. Power nearly 30 minutes, 29-21. Byram 26-38. Clifton, third on the team, 21-19. Clifton was credited with 9 hits in that game. So some impressive stats there. Again, our stats brought to you by Level Financial Advisors, helping you retire better. Visit levelfa.com.
I get Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's frustration, Brian, beyond the fact that the glove was outside the crease. You look at the overhead replay. His body is inside the paint.
Right.
So if I'm the goaltender, in my mind,
I'm in the crease. Right.
I get the glove was outside. There's no doubt about that.
Now we're judging, is the plane of the crease, or are you in? Is your skate touching blue or not touching blue?
Right. And I get the rule. The rule is, if it's outside, but if you're the goaltender, you do think, I understand Lukanen's point, because the majority of your body, your positioning is in the crease. And if your glove goes outside of it, then the glove is still an extension of you, but it's outside, so you don't, the barrier is broken.
And he might also be thinking, look, it's a shot to the glove side. My glove was hit. I couldn't get it back in position in time to make a save. So how is that not interference?
So is it not the rule's clear, but it's not.
Right. So here's what I'm doing. If the goalie's glove is outside of the plane of the crease, I'm going to go bump it every time. And then say, shoot. I'm going to go bump the glove. He's outside of the crease.
Because you're allowed to within the rule.
Right. And I'm a pro. I'm good enough. Right. I'll make sure that it doesn't look like I'm doing it with intent, as the rule book says. I'm making an effort to get out of the way. I'll lean back as I throw my elbow up at his glove.
But do you have to?
That's right.
Because you're outside the crease. The glove is outside the crease.
As long as it says here that reasonable effort to not make contact. I don't think Valenstein had any intent to make contact either. He was steered right in. But because here's the thing. Had the contact come up high on Hellebuck's shoulder, who may have been leaning over, which would have been outside of the blue paint, but because it was low in the pad, which was sitting in the blue paint. Yeah,
that's why I don't like the challenge.
I just hate the rule.
Right.
And I just hate that it ruins the game flow, it ruins the exciting moments.
Right.
It just it's every night now.
And I want
every night there's a challenge.
Right. I want calls to be right. You don't want goalies getting blown up in the crease or just plays that are blatantly should not count as goals, but we're not at the point. And I Paul's right. You know, challenges take too long. There's so much gray area. You don't necessarily know. And
when the goalie who is playing in the NHL doesn't know the rule,
right? Like. And Paul brought up the point in an intermission, first or second, I can't remember. You know, replay took over 5 minutes. You know, you sit there wondering, does the NHL even know what the rule is to because it's taking this long in
they
certain cases.
Yeah, I know.
That's the frustrating.
They don't know it either. I know. Anyway, we mentioned Dahlin out. Back spasms. Lindy's hoping it will be a short-term, not a long-term thing. But he was out tonight. And that's why you saw some of these defensive players play a ton of minutes. That's why Gilbert got into the lineup. Gilbert ended up only playing 7:21. Of course, he missed 15 minutes with that five-minute fighting major and the 10-minute misconduct. The injury report is brought to you by the Orthopedic Center at Catholic Health St. Joseph Campus. Go with Joe's. One other stat to get to you, the power plays. Sabres tonight, 1 of 3. Winnipeg, 1 of 5. Pat, the penalties, whether they're good calls or bad calls, the Sabres just still are taking too many.
Yeah, in the 5-on-3, I agree with Paul. I mean, you watch the play happen, and both the players that went to the box deserve the penalties. You can't give a team like Winnipeg a 5-on-3. You can't give any team a 5-on-3, but when you're trying to just get out of the rut you're in, you can't allow a team like that to have that opportunity. And it almost killed it, but almost isn't good enough. And results in the game being tied at 2.
Yeah, that 5-on-3. That's where Connor got it on the power play. Power play update, your Dynabrade.com power play update, powered by Dynabrade Tools, proudly made here in Buffalo. Okay, we'll get the official update on the standings here in a moment, but let's see how the other games went tonight. Our final check of the scores from around the league, we go back to Pat.
Thanks, Brian. It's brought to you by Fiegel, Carr & Joshua Board of Attorneys. Believe it or not, there are still some games ongoing. As the Flames and Blues have gone midway through the second period, Calgary tying it up in the second, 2-2 the score there. While midway through the second in Edmonton, the Oilers, thanks to a couple from Zach Hyman and also Leon Draisaitl's 18th of the season, now have a 4-1 lead over Columbus, 12:06 to go in the middle stanza there. Sam Montembeau with a 29-save shutout victory as Montreal defeats Nashville 3-0. The Senators 2-1 winners over the Red Wings tonight. Josh Norris, both the goals for Ottawa in that contest. The Lightning with an 8-1 upending of the Sharks tonight. 5 goals in the opening period. It took them to the third for San Jose to get on the scoreboard. The Panthers come back for a 7-5 win over the Flyers. Philadelphia erased a 4-goal deficit in that contest. Well, the Hurricanes 5-3 winners over the Avalanche. The Kraken pick up a 5-2 win over the Islanders as well. And week 14 of the NFL is underway. Back and forth action between the Lions and the Packers tonight. Detroit on Jared Goff's 3-yard touchdown pass have a 24-21 lead over Green Bay with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. So Thursday night, good matchup of NFC North foes. Buffalo's next opponent, the Lions, 11-1 as they have a lead over Green Bay.
Yeah, Detroit's going to get some extra rest with this Thursday game, so it'll be like an 11-day rest for them. Say, Bills obviously are out in Los Angeles, and then they'll head to Detroit. 425 this week, 425 next week for both of these games with the Rams and the Lions coming up. And then the Bills finish with 3 divisional games. Pats, Jets, Pats, right?
Yeah.
In that order.
Hosting New England and the Jets and then go to New England to end it. So I do like how you play your division at the end there and kind of – the Bills division is in hand, obviously, but you know, when there are years where maybe the division comes down to one game, it would be nice to have those right at the end.
That's right. Well, a overtime loss tonight for the Sabres. Buffalo getting a point that improves, or I guess you'd say, you know, maybe not that exciting, the fact they had just a point. 11-12-3 right now. 25 points. Here's the bad news. They're 2 from the bottom. Here's the good news. They're 2 from the wild card. The Rangers right now are wild card 2 with 27. But you've got Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Columbus in front of you. You're tied with the Islanders and then Ottawa, Detroit, Montreal below you. So literally, you're a win from the wild card. You also could be a win by someone else from the being tied from the bottom. So it is a jumble of teams right now that are fighting for wild card. The separation between the wild card and dead last in the entire conference is only 4 points, and the Sabres are right in the middle of those 4 right there.
So we know how tough it is, at least historically it is, to leap into one of those spots after about 25-ish games in the year. So teams do it. You got to leap a couple of teams to get there.
That's right. All right, well, Winnipeg is in the books, a 3-2 win for the Jets as we wrap up our post-game show here. Don't forget, Saturday, Utah, 1 o'clock, we'll have the Steve Foley Law pregame at 12 here from KeyBank Center. That'll wrap things. We want to thank our crew, Evan DePasquale, our network producer back in our Amherst studios. Thank you, Evan. Crew here at KeyBank Center, Pat Malacaro, Jonathan Koziel, Paul Hamilton. Our pregame show host was Mike Shope. Our engineer was Tom Maddy.
And our game announcers are Dan Dunleavy and Rob Ray. I'm Brian Colziel. I thank you for listening. Again, the final, Winnipeg 3, Buffalo 2. Sabres back at it Saturday against Utah at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your night. And we'll talk to you Saturday right here on the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network. Good night, everyone.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.